Money Radio for a really great future. We're talking real money.
It's podcast time again. Sorry, but it just is. That's what happens. We have to do podcasts. Hello, I'm Don McDonald. That guy over there. Oh, gosh, I hit my microphone. That's Tom Cock.
Greetings.
We talk
all
real money.
Good.
The money matters that matter most to you because money matters in your life. It's kind of important. Here, let me improve my posture. There we go. And tilt the camera a little bit there. Okay. Much better. So we want to welcome you to both the podcast and the video cast. We're glad you're here. We're going to talk about stuff and answer one of your questions that was sent in at talkingrealmoney.com. But remember, you can also call them in at 855-935-8255. So give us a holler. Now, we often talk about the financial services industry. Why? Because this is a money show, and you often deal with the financial services industry. And for most of the 20th and big chunk of the 21st century, those with whom you deal have called themselves stockbrokers or brokers. Now, you know, I've always had a lot of fun with the word brokers because brokers, it defines what they do. They make you broker. So they don't want to be called brokers anymore, do they, Tom?
But they don't. I mean, and here's the other thing. I think if you asked people in my family, you know, my extended family, what I do for a living, most of them would probably say he's a stockbroker. I'm betting they would because that's the fallback term, right? That's the that's kind of been around.
You've never been a stockbroker.
I know.
I, on the other hand, have been an evil stockbroker.
I know.
But what my story proves is that anyone can reform themselves and turn over a new leaf.
And what a leaf that was. A giant maple. But okay, but let's just talk about this. Yeah, so today, this article that I read recently says, why do so few people call themselves stockbrokers? Well, interestingly enough, everyone wants to be not even an investment advisor anymore. Now they want to be financial advisors or wealth managers because that makes
wealth
it sound
managers
like,
even better.
Yeah, because I only deal with people that have a lot of money.
Yeah.
Wealth.
Because I'm special. You see, if you manage money, you just, if you manage wealth, you're on a whole nother plane.
Yeah. That's, and by the way, where is the line for you? How much do you have to be wealthy?
$1 billion.
Okay.
$1 billion.
Never going to reach even when
you're
close.
If you're not managing $1 billion with just one client, then you're not a wealth manager.
That's fair.
You're just a money guy.
But let's just walk through some of the terminology, because I do think it's an important thing for people to realize the people they're dealing with. A CFP, for example, Certified Financial Planner. Did you know? Did you know that 59% of them, and I think this is for advisors, the highest standard, the best designation you can get. It's very thorough. You go through estate planning, you go through taxes, investing, financial planning, all those things. Takes a while, a year or so, 59% of them can sell commissionable products. Let me say that again. 6 out of 10 CFPs are working for a firm where they can sell you an annuity, a stock, a loaded mutual fund at all. Yes.
Wait. I have to wait here. Wait. Aren't certified financial planners by their creed required to, at all times, act as a fiduciary to their clients?
Well, it's funny you should ask. The CFP board CEO, Kevin Keller, says, those CFP professionals are committed to acting as a fiduciary for their clients at all times.
At all times.
When providing financial advice, which includes brokerage services. Now, I have no idea how he can say that because we know CFPs who sell products. If 6 out of 10 can, then many of them will, because there's a living to be made.
7 out of 10 do.
Yeah, I don't know that number, but I can tell you that
I made that up.
It's no guarantee that you're going to get fiduciary advice. I'll say that.
As a matter of fact, we know a very well-known guy in the Seattle area who's a CFP who, at free steak dinners, sells people indexed annuities. Now, if that isn't a violation of his certified financial planner oath, I do hereby pledge that I will be a fiduciary at all times. I will not sell indexed annuities. What is?
And I hope we get to the day where they don't allow CFPs to operate in a transactional business like a stock broker does. By the way, the investment advisor is somebody that should use, you hope low-cost mutual funds, but that doesn't always happen. Even investment advisors can sell you stuff. This is kind of the where the business has moved to. And as I say, it's now people are kind of moving to this wealth manager. Everybody, no one wants to be called stockbroker anymore. They want to be called, as I say, financial advisor or wealth manager. So let's, if you're using a stockbroker, you're working with someone who is, it's a transactional enterprise, right? They're selling you a product.
Right.
They owe an allegiance to the firm, not to you. Let me say that again. If you're working for somebody who works for, I don't know, Smith Barney or
Smith Barney anymore.
Okay. I was just going back a few years.
It's Morgan Stanley. Morgan Stanley, Dean Witter, Smith Barney.
Edward Jones. They have an allegiance to that firm, not to you. And we saw this recently. I shared this with you, I think, Don, where we had someone who had an Edward Jones portfolio, decided to move some of the portfolio out, but Ed Jones just decided to sell off the entire portfolio and the client had to book all the capital gains, which I'm sure they were legally allowed to do, but morally, is that really the right thing for your client? No, that is not the right thing for your client. So here are my takeaways from all this. Labels today in the financial services industry mean nothing. CFP, nothing. Doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean what treatment you're going to get as a client or the products they will use for you or who really they're working for. Doesn't mean.
Well, wait. Registered investment advisor.
Getting to that.
Okay.
Because it is
said
the firm.
All titles.
I'm saying individual firm. The hire should be made with the firm, not with the person. A registered investment advisor. And it has to be a 100% registered investment advisor because many people are duly registered, right? They have, as you pointed out, Don, the RIA hat, and then they sometimes take that and put on the merely suitable hat where they're working for the broker-dealer. So 100% fee only, the firm first, and that's it. A 100% fee only fiduciary firm is the only one you should hire. Then you find the right advisor inside of that firm, but you hire someone who has your interests at heart, not the firm's.
And there's a trick. There's actually a way to pretty easily determine this, whether they're a duly registered advisor or not, whether they're strictly a registered investment advisor. And that is go to their website. And for most of them, you scroll clear down to the fine print at the bottom of the page, and it will tell you, you know, so-and-so is an investment advisor registered to the SEC. And if it also says broker dealer services provided by or something like that, also a broker dealer, look for the term broker dealer. If you see broker dealer, then you have a dual registered advisor and they are not always required to do what's best for you.
Start with that.
And by the way, the term financial advisor is 100% meaningless. It has no legal definition. Anybody, you can call yourself a financial advisor and you just can't take money.
Yeah, don't charge for it.
Don't charge for it. But if you want to say, I'm a financial advisor, I'll advise you. You can certainly do that. It's legal. You just can't charge money. Then you have to be a registered investment advisor.
I had somebody from the show just call me recently and say, I'm working with my financial advisor at Mutual of Omaha.
Yeah, that is not an investment, registered investment advisor. That's just some guy selling insurance.
And boy, was he ever, because it's a whole life policy where they're throwing in a lot of money every month and they're getting a little bit of insurance and getting a lot of very expensive, actively managed mutual funds the money's going into. And this person was in their 20s. This is not a place to start when you're in your 20s. Do not do that.
And before you get yourself into one of these things, another way you can find out is to call us. We will help you figure out whether or not you're dealing with a true fiduciary or not. Just give us a call either on the show or you can call our offices. The show number is 855-935-TALK. The office of Vestry is 800-386-3004. We'll help you figure this out.
Don't call late. Also, I go to bed early. So.
Yeah, call up to 2 a.m. Pacific time.
No, call at 2
a.m. After
that's when
2
I get
a.m.
up. I'm ready to go.
855-935-TALK is the number to call for questions for the show and the podcast. You can also send them in at Talking Real Money, just like Spencer did. Ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Are bonds irrational if you have a mortgage, Tom? If you have a mortgage, you've essentially shorted a bond. It seems irrational. I just made up a new word.
I like it.
It seems irrational to me to short bonds while you're also buying bonds. I understand that liquidity matters in retirement, but I plan on my house being a small portion of my portfolio when I retire in about 15 years. If you have a paid off mortgage, you also have more income flexibility in retirement, which has value, particularly in down markets. If you're concerned about liquidity, you could set up a HELOC for the just in case scenario. I'm not paying extra on my mortgage, but I plan on having a paid off house before I retire. I also plan on being 100% in equities until my house is paid off. My risk quiz score was in the high 80s. Wow.
Unusually
what are your
high.
Thoughts on this approach?
Okay. Tom. That sounds like three or four questions. I'm trying to make sure
it's
understand
really
the
one question.
Which is
it's
what?
Really one question. Does it make sense to pay off a mortgage as opposed to buying bonds? What he is saying is, isn't my mortgage just like a backward bond that I'm paying somebody else interest as opposed to somebody paying me interest? So doesn't it make more sense for me just not to pay somebody else interest and own my house free and clear?
To me, this is always a question. There's a lot of other questions I'd have for this person because if you're still a long way from retirement and you can pay off your mortgage and you're going to stay in that house, then I can see it. The issue we regularly see, though, is that people are overpaying to pay down their mortgage. They're getting closer to retirement, and they're going to need cash in retirement to pay the bills. Then I'm going to say, no. In today's world, you can still refinance your mortgage for, what, 3%?
Yes.
So you can get 3% money there. Yeah, if you had it all in bonds.
In fact, at 15, you can still, you're in the twos.
Okay, so and if you had it all in bonds, yeah, I would expect that you're not going to make a lot of money in that. But you already said you have it all in stocks. I'm a little confused by why the bonds.
Well, he's all in, because he's saying in retirement, why shouldn't you have a paid off house? And he makes some faulty assumptions. One of them is, if you have a paid off mortgage, you also have more income flexibility in retirement, which has value, particularly in down stock markets. Now, there's a major assumption in there that the assumption is home values don't go down. Stocks go down. Houses don't go down. That is a spurious assumption and one that I can anecdotally, personally attest to. In that I saw my house get to $1 million in 2007 and then drop back to about $600,000 until it rose back up to about $1 million now. So to get from the high to the current high was a 14-year process.
By the way, that's
back to where I was.
That's very similar to mine. So I bought mine for $880 in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And it went straight down, literally from the day I bought it. Remember August of 2007? Yeah, that was the peak of the housing market. And it got down to the place where I think it was about 500. And if you were to believe Zillow today, I don't even like to say the number. It's so ridiculous what Zillow says it's worth. But it's worth considerably more than the 880 today.
And the HELOC argument. Okay, I get that one. But there's a huge uncertainty with HELOCs. You don't know what your rate is going to be at any given time. Whereas with a mortgage, you're not really shorting bonds. With a mortgage, you're locking in a rate for 15 to 30 years. And we would never suggest you buy a 15 to 30 year bond because the risk to the investor is too high.
Exactly. And again, this is why you do more detailed financial planning in some ways. If you're really trying to work out a retirement plan, the first question to say is this the home you want to live in? What is your cost of living while you're paying it? And what income sources do you have in retirement? That would be the starting place for me. Then I'd work my way backwards to whether I paid it off or put the money into liquid in type in, you know.
And if you're invested. locked into a 3% mortgage for the next 30 years, and you are an investor who can take the kind of risk you can take, then you've got really, really good odds of dramatically exceeding over the course of decades the 3% that you're paying on the mortgage. It's like borrowing money cheap to invest it. And if you can take risk, that often pays off. So
it has paid off.
It has paid off.
You don't know about the next 30 years.
We don't have any clue. 855-935-TALK for your questions to us here on the podcast, or go to talkingrealmoney.com and send them in. Also, if you need that planning help, you just want to sit down with an advisor over the phone, via video, go to vestory.com and set up an appointment with one of our advisors. They're free. Free. We won't manage your money forever for free, but we will help you one off for free. There is no obligation, no trick, no gimmick, and no sales pitch. So go to vestory.com and sign up for that.
And somebody wrote, you're really on today. Somebody wrote me recently and said they really enjoyed your boyish charms on the video presentation. So now I watch more carefully today and I see them. So well done,
my
sir.
My boyish charms.
Yeah.
Even though in a couple of days I'll be officially an old man.
Let's not go there. What do you say?
Thanks for being a part of our little get together. We really appreciate you being there. And man, we are almost to 400 video subscribers now, Tom.
That 400,000?
400.
Oh.
Period. But we're going to pass that this weekend.
Okay.
We're going to.
So by the 4th of July,
we're not going for
the 70% virus. We're going for 400.
Yeah, but you have to look at the rate of increase.
I see.
At this kind of a rate of increase, we could be at thousands in a year or two.
You're slaying me here, literally.
All right. Thanks for being there. Check out our podcast. Check out our videos. Tell a friend. Go to Apple Podcasts and review us if you like us. If you don't like us, just stop listening. Nobody's making you listen. Thanks for being there. That's Tom. I'm Don. We hang out talking real money.
Talking real money. We hope you realize that the information provided on Talking Real Money is for educational and hopefully enjoyable purposes only. Providing personalized financial planning or investing advice takes time, so please consult with a really good fee-only fiduciary investment, tax, or legal advisor. We know a good one. Investing must always involve risk. In other words, you can and probably will lose money at times. Also, as much as you want it, no one can accurately and consistently predict the future. So past performance doesn't tell you a darn thing about what the future will bring. Unlike many other programs that say something similar, Talking Real Money is not trying to get you to buy or sell any financial products or securities. Instead, the program is provided as a public service by Vestory, a fee-only registered investment advisor. Thanks for listening, and please visit TalkingRealMoney.com for more information and disclosures. That's a wrap.